Hi, this is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye!
Welcome back. We're here with another special and very informative show, and we're speaking with Dr. Moshe Dekel. Dr. Dekel is a holistic OBGYN or GYN doctor, and we're going to be speaking about topics that seem to be confounding much of the medical community. So welcome, Dr. Dekel. Are we up to it?
Oh, we're definitely up to it, and thanks for the invitation. We're going to have some good time, and we're going to have some excellent information for our audience.
I think so. Well, I just wanted to start with the fact that something caught my attention in the very preeminent medical journal called The Post.
The Post, right.
And it's titled in big black letters, Global Kick to the Crotch. That got my attention. Plunging sperm counts. Well, now I still have my attention. And they spoke about dropping sperm counts by 62% between 1973 and 2018. And that's new research out of the University of Jerusalem. It was an international study, not just the United States. And he said, and I'm just going to cut to the chase, he added that the findings serve as a canary in the coal mine. Mm-hmm. And the research also sounds the alarm bells for men's health in general, because low sperm counts are associated with an increased risk of chronic diseases, autoimmune disease, testicular cancer, and decreased lifespan. And he said the average counts, average right now, are 49 million per milliliter. And whereas below 40 million, we now have, we have a crisis. And so what we're looking at is averages of men today. What we're looking at is men today, the counts are in the 49 million per milliliter, and they estimate a decline to 40 million threshold to be within the next decade. Now, what they're saying is that's suboptimal for fertility. So, Dr. Dekel,
yes,
can you, and what is your thoughts on this?
Well, it's kind of interesting because if I look at the original numbers when I was in medical school back in the 70s, the normal sperm count per milliliter was 200 million.
Oh, and now we're at 49 million.
It's another way to look at the decline. It's at 62%, you know, according to the latest studies, which is actually more than that by far. I mean, today, when you go for an infertility consultation, the male has to produce at least 20 million per cc. Or milliliters, the same thing. In my practice as an OBGYN and infertility for 20-some years until the year 2000 when I switched to holistic medicine, I dealt with a lot of infertile couples. And, you know, statistically, if you look at the literature, it says about 15% of American couples are having problem conceiving. I can tell you from being in the trenches for 25 years at that time, I can tell you it's much more than that.
Really?
I think it's at least one in five, which is 20% easy. And again, 50% of that infertility is due to male factors. Okay, whether it be low sperm count, low motility, morphology, which is not up to par. Okay, so let me explain to the audience what we're looking at. When they do sperm analysis, okay, they look at the number, but they also look at what? How many viable sperm we have. We're going to have 40 million, but if half of them are dead, it's down to 20. Okay? They look at the morphology, which means what? How do these sperms look like? Do they look normal? Do they have a regular perfect head and a tail? Okay, or are they abnormal, which are most likely not be able to conceive or to penetrate the egg and create a conception? Another huge parameter is their motility. In other words, how are they moving? Is it brisk moving, which indicates what? Good, healthy sperm? Or are they sluggish, which indicates what? Poor quality sperm, which most likely is not going to achieve conception. So what we're seeing is a dramatic increase in infertility and dramatic increase in vitro.
Oh yes, the whole industry.
That's what they do. It's like, and that's the future of this. It's like more and more people are going to be able to conceive naturally, and you have all these clinics that do, you know, in vitro with promises from here to tomorrow, and tremendous expense. I mean, they charge $30,000 per cycle. I mean, it's so outrageous. And it's not covered by insurance. So, you know, every force, there's a contra-force. And the contra-force right now is what? In vitro.
And the part that is something I want to emphasize to the audience, this isn't only, although it's manifesting itself in relationship to low sperm count. This is not only low sperm count. This goes along with low testosterone, increased autoimmune disease, increased testicular cancer. So we're looking at a whole syndrome, and it's not just fertility, although fertility, we're looking at the future of our species. And at this moment, it's being threatened.
Yep, absolutely. And if you look at something else that you mentioned before, is longevity. Low sperm count decreases longevity. You say, wait a minute, why is it so? Well, if you look at nature, what happens when any species lose their ability to procreate? They die. Nature is very to the point. You can't reproduce, it's time to go. So it's not that unpredictable or hard to conceive, the notion that if we're not being able to conceive, procreate, it's time to go. Therefore what? Less longevity, lower longevity. So I definitely agree with your assessment.
So what happens is we read something like that in the Post and we hold our heads and we get very worried and concerned. But we have no way to approach it. I mean, if we're not well informed in holistic medicine, we have no way to approach this problem and create a solution. So today we're going to be discussing what created this problem and what can we focus on in terms of solutions so we can intercede. I know I showed that article to my son, who's 14, and he said, are you saying I eat badly? And I said, no, I just want you to see what not eating well can lead to. And that is very important. So now he's making his own lunches because he wants to know what's in his food.
Good. Excellent. That's a very good motivational speech that you had with him. But I agree with you. At this point, it's not about the headline on the Post. It's about, okay, what do we do? what do we need to do in order to, number one, stop the decline, and number two, actually to improve? So if you look at the number or the sperm count number declining, it's a multifactorial issue. It's not just one thing, okay? And you mentioned correctly that lifestyle, which includes diet, obviously, is a major part of it. So it's what we eat, how we digest, how we assimilate the macro and micronutrients, how we burn them, how we create energy, okay? Because everything is energy. The body needs energy to make sperm, okay? And if it doesn't have it, the last thing it, on its mind is to create sperm because it's too busy just staying alive, okay? How we eliminate, how we detoxify, how we sleep, what level of hormones we have, emotions, absolutely important. So, yes, there are ways for us to inform our audience what they can do, what you need to do, not just a sperm count, but just be healthy and live a long life and be happy.
Which so, will eventually translate to sperm count.
Correct.
Exactly.
Correct.
All roads lead to Rome.
Right. And the thing is, we had a pre-discussion and talk about you know, contaminations and exposure to chemicals. It's a huge problem. And you know, we cannot take the 100,000 chemicals out of the environment. We can try to curb it down. But what we need to do as individuals, we need to detoxify. We need to detoxify.
Exactly.
We have five elimination channels. We have the liver, we have the gut, we have the kidneys, we have the skin, and we have the lungs. Okay, so what do? With skin, get into sauna, sweat, get yourself a portable sauna, a couple hundred dollars or more on Amazon. Get in there. That will take a lot of chemical poisons out of the system. Okay, and liver, absolutely important. What we do, coffee enema, we talked about many, many times. Okay, and of course, digestion. Digestion is paramount. And we have many segments on it, but, you know, it's never too old to talk about it.
Exactly.
Because unfortunately, the majority of us are not eating correctly. And therefore, not having good digestion, and therefore, having inflammation, and inflammation decreases sperm count.
And then we have the skin which releases when we sweat, releases toxins and heavy metals. It's amazing how much the skin can release in terms of toxicity. And then the lungs release the CO2, which also in accumulation is a toxin for
acidic.
Our body.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Become acidic.
So,
and the gut, you know. How many of our patients don't move their bowels at least once every 24 hours?
Most of them.
Okay. And the issue with the beef that I have to pick up with conventional medicine is the fact that no doctor, conventional doctor, asks their patients how often they move their bowels.
No.
It's ridiculous. And how many patients of ours, you know, tell us once a week and they see the horror on our face and say, hey, I've been like this all my life.
So that's my normal.
You say, that doesn't make it right.
Exactly. And so what I've found and what I'm doing for myself, and I've found it pretty dramatic in that I've suffered with passing bowel my whole life. But what I do now is I take a magnesium before bed and a magnesium when I get up. If I take more than that, it's too much. And then, but before bed and when I get up twice a day, and bowels are now regular. And all my life, I've struggled with this and suffered with it. And now it's normalized, and I feel so excited about such a minor adjustment and such a major change.
There are quite a few different magnesiums. Which one do you take?
I take citrate because it will move bowel.
That's what
milk of magnesia is. It's citrate, and So I take citrate on purpose. Getting magnesium, but I'm also getting that power of the magnesium citrate, which sequesters fluid, draws fluid also, to it into the bowel.
Right. But also, obviously, we need to take hydrochloric acid, digestive enzymes, and probiotic. It's a must.
Definitely. And when your bowels are moving, your relationship to your hormones are different because they're all bound up in the liver and then released into the bowel. Your relationship to your mood is different because the bowels, how many of us don't feel so well? After Thanksgiving, we feel like exhausted and sleepy. Well, we didn't do anything differently. It's all our bowels signaling our brain and making us feel like that, making us feel bloated and constipated and just not bright and alert. So it has a large effect on our brain also and our energy. So another
talking
thing.
About that,
what?
I'm sorry. Talking about energy. It's, as I said before, it's all about energy because for us to be functioning and healthy, we need a lot of energy. And how do we get energy? Is what we eat, how we digest, how we assimilate, and how we burn. And the burning part of it depends on two major hormone systems. One of them is the thyroid, and the other one is the adrenal. And we talked about this many, many times. I thought ever... too much talking about that because it's so pervasive. When we ask a patient, you know, how's the energy? How many times they say, oh, it's not bad for 50. Oh, it's not bad for 50.
Exactly. Not, okay. I've had not bad for 38.
Not bad for 38. Okay. Not bad for 38. And I look at them and say, what do you mean not bad?
Exactly.
Because why? Because we're being taught that our energy is going to go down with age. And there's no rule in the Bible about this or any other place. We can be as vital as 75, as 45, or 85 and 55. Okay, if we do the right thing, which we are talking about. It's all about what? The lifestyle. Epigenetics, which is lifestyle.
Well, we so know
support the longevity gene instead of the cancer gene.
Exactly. We know that our testosterone increases with exercise. We know that. That's not even questioned. And when our testosterone increases, it also increases our sperm count. So we know one way to increase the sperm count is by exercising. And that's not only just heavy weight lifting. It could be long walks. It could be jumping a jump rope in your house for no expense. But exercising on a consistent level and building muscle. And what do we need to do to build muscle? We need to have adequate protein and we need to stress our muscle. And building muscle will increase our testosterone, but there are a couple of things that will block that increase. And I'll start with the simple one, is eating carbs right after you exercise. And that blocks the ability of human growth hormone, which is what's going to stimulate the building up of the testosterone, from having a receptor site. So we don't want to eat carbs right after we exercise. We can eat protein, and then there's no problems. But carbs would not be beneficial. But you know what else lowers our ability to build up our testosterone is alcohol. Not just a sip or a small glass of wine every night, but heavy drinking lowers testosterone and increases estrogen. and the increased estrogen acts to convert the testosterone. So you have a circle there going around that's generally lowering your sex hormones.
Mm-hmm. True, absolutely. So there are a lot of stuff that we can do, which is sometimes difficult because of lifestyle changes are perceived by people to be difficult. How many times we say, listen, they come to us with complaints about digestion for years, for 20, 30 years,
mm-hmm.
and they will do anything to change it, right? Bloating, fatigue, constipation, brain fog, you name it, the whole gamut of digestion is not working. And when we suggest, okay, you need to do bone broth for 3 weeks, and then start the elimination diet, the reverse elimination diet, they look at us and say, I can't do that. I said,
it's too hard.
It's too hard. I said, okay, so be sick. When we speak to our patients, we hold them accountable. We know what they need to do. The question is, are they willing to do it? And if they look for a magic pill, our office is not their office. Because there's no magic pill. There's only going to be prescription drugs. We're going to ruin them.
And they're
all
toxic.
The side effects, they will not achieve their goal. So, yeah, tough love. Yeah. You're sick for 30 years? Are you willing to do 3 weeks of bone broth with the right supplementation to get your leaky gut under control and therefore your life under control and good health? You know, so if we stick to our convictions, you know, most like to say, you know what, maybe it's time for me to do something about it.
We know that antidepressants also lower testosterone levels. And so we're knowing that multiple different drugs can act.
And get you fat.
And get you fat. Which,
and reduce your libido.
And knocks
and
your libido
erectile
out.
Erectile dysfunction.
And what?
Erectile dysfunction.
Oh, that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
So people just don't, when their testosterone isn't up, when their sperm count isn't up, they don't feel like men in the same way. They don't feel that chi, that go out there and grab the world and
absolutely
put it in your hand and make it
absolutely
yours. And
absolutely,
that's the exciting thing about testosterone, to watch it, to see it. You know, there are certain people that you can literally see, and I'm not talking about bodybuilders.
Right.
You know, bodybuilders look, to my eye, look abnormal. But I'm talking about men who you could see the testosterone in them. You can feel it. It's a pheromone. And it's very attractive. It's attractive to men, other men. And it's attractive to women to see that level of energy from a male. It's the same with women. When you see that their hormones are shining on them, their skin glows, their energy is up, it's easier to laugh. And it's wonderful to see when hormones are optimized.
Yeah. And to your point, which was a very good point, as far as the way men feel on testosterone, you know, good level of testosterone, the chi and just addressing the world, etc. It's a very simple physiological fact that we have more receptors for testosterone in the brain, the male brain, than the genitals. So without that, our brain is not going to function correctly. But let's not neglect women, because testosterone for women is absolutely important and paramount. Okay, obviously different levels, okay, much less, okay, and as important as progesterone and estrogen is for women, men also need a little bit of estrogen and progesterone. But estrogen, testosterone for women, that decreases after menopause because of ovarian shutdown, affect women in a major way. And a lot of my patients and your patients need some supplementation with testosterone to do what? Number one, to keep their muscle mass, prevent osteoporosis, okay, enhance libido, be functional.
And
very important.
And brain. We can't forget brain. We know high testosterone people do better in testing. We see it. We've measured it. And it is easier to think when the testosterone level is adequate or, or high. And we see it in testing. But I want to go over some of the nutrients that people can take to balance their testosterone. Guess what? The humble vitamin C has been very well studied. Even at 1,000 milligrams twice a day, they found it increased sperm motility by 92%. It increased sperm count by more than 100%. And I didn't know this before I research for this show. It reduced the proportion of deformed sperm cells by 55%, and it increased sperm count and motility. Pretty impressive, isn't it? The vitamin,
yes, it is.
Vitamin C.
And it's very easy to take.
It's easy to take, not hard on the...
And there are many reasons to take vitamin C in addition to sperm.
Yeah, our immune system.
Yeah.
Our skin. And it goes on.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And there's another humble supplement, and I'll move to an herb. Fenugreek. Fenugreek increases testosterone level. It increases sperm count, increases the frequency of sexual activity, and it improves erectile dysfunction, because it's increasing circulation. And how do men get stimulated? Through circulation, and increases circulation.
Mm-hmm.
But vitamin D is another good one. We know that it boosts testosterone levels. Taking 3,000 international units of D every day for 1 year may increase testosterone levels by 25%. And ashwagandha, we've discussed this many times. It's an adaptogen. It is number one herb in India. Women take it and men take it because it's an adaptogen. It's for the adrenals. But at the same time, we know that stress suppresses sperm count and testosterone levels. Stress, cortisol and testosterone are antagonists. So by lowering the cortisol, you potentially, with different methods, can more easily raise the testosterone. So ashwagandha is an adaptogen. It improves sperm counts. And maybe one of the ways it does is because it's very calming. It increases sperm motility. It's an antioxidant, which supports sperm and testosterone levels. 675 milligrams of ashwagandha root per day for 3 months increase sperm counts by 167%. Wow. And sperm volume by 53%.
But conventional medicine is not going to tell you that, because they want to do what? Charge you $30,000 for what? In vitro.
We know B12 also increases sperm motility. It doesn't increase count, but it increases motility and activity of sperm. And B12, we know CoQ10 also works to support sperm levels. And now, there was one that I'm not familiar with, so I'm going to ask you right here on the air if you know it. D-aspartic acid supplement. They say 2.7 grams for 3 months increased testosterone levels by 30 to 60% and sperm count by 60 to 100%. And I wasn't familiar with that at all.
That's, yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know it either.
Yeah.
That's what happened. We did some research, right?
It takes care.
We ran every day.
Yeah.
At least I do. At least I do.
Mm-hmm.
What I would like to do is touch a little bit about the testosterone level for men and what do we do in order to support that. Because men lose testosterone to the tune of 1 to 2% per year from the age of 25. So by the time we get to the age of 50 or 60, we may be losing 35 to 70%. Okay, so we both have a lot of males who need testosterone supplementation. It's not difficult, but it has to be done under supervision because hormones are powerful powerful compounds that affect a lot of other functions in the body.
And
but again, giving the right level of testosterone
exactly.
to men and women is absolutely important.
Yeah, people think more is better, and
yeah.
what it's the right dose that is better and
That's
the
correct.
Best. You know, you see the pictures of these young people, these young men who are...
Mm-hmm.
With unisex clothes and they're in their 20s and they look pubescent. They have no muscle mass. They must have no testosterone because they never developed a male body. What's happening here?
That's a new agenda. That's a new agenda. That's what they're talking about. Toxic masculinity. They're emasculating young men. They make them ashamed of being men. And they're destroying society if we let them do it. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
It's dangerous. It's crazy. I mean, that and giving hormones to to young children.
Oh,
and,
please.
And get them through surgery to... I mean, really, it's criminal, but that's a different topic.
That's a big topic. I'd like to have a show on that and
yeah,
open that show to the audience because people need to speak up and respond.
Yeah.
I think it's, I agree with you, it's criminal. Kids go through, young people go through phases.
That's right.
This little boy said just recently to his mother, he said, you know, I'm bisexual. I said, what did you say to him? She said, I listened. I said, no, you should have said, well, how many times have you had sex with women? How many times have you had sex with men? Do you know the difference? He's like 11 years old or 12 years old. And he's already declaring he's bisexual. He doesn't even know what he's saying.
Well, that's what they feed them in school, unfortunately.
I don't know. I don't know about that. But there's one other that I wanted to talk about that we wanted to talk about is Tungkat Ali. It's a wonderful herb for men and women. And it's from Asia. And it is shown to increase sperm count. It's shown to increase energy and DHEA and testosterone. It is a very powerful herb for men and for women because it works on many levels, but it also works through the adrenals. Do you know this herb, Dr. Deckel?
No, that's a new one to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we did this show on what they called hot plants.
Mm-hmm.
And it was introduced to me by, what's his name? I'm forgetting right now. I'll remember it in a second. By the man who wrote Hot Plants, who goes all over the world searching out hot plants for sexual enhancement. And he brought up Tungkat Ali and all the studies behind it, but he also brought up another herb from Brazil. It's called Catuaba, and he told stories of they make it. It's in the Bahia in the north of Brazil, and he said everybody walks around and they're drinking. They make like milkshakes of it, and you drink it. And he said, I was sound asleep, and I drank one, and I woke up. Oh, my God, what is happening? And it's called Catuaba. And so both of these, the Tangkak Alley is shown, and through studies, that it increases sperm count, and the Catuaba increases sexuality.
Yeah. Actually, I read a couple of things about Tangkak Alley now that that I kind of rearranged my thought about it. Yes, and in fact, there was a couple of studies that showed actually increased muscle mass.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which is pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, usually recommended dose, I think it's between 2 and 400 milligrams. And it's available. It's not exotic.
No,
it's pretty pretty easy to maintain to obtain.
Yeah, it's a bark of a tree, and now they're just going crazy harvesting it. But it grows like similar in the jungle, and it grows almost like bamboo. You almost can't keep it down. So we're not going to hurt the harvest by harvesting it.
Right.
And it's,
I think it's come from Malaysia, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my knowledge. That's what I've learned.
Yeah.
So shall we talk about something else that's really, it's plaguing many, many people. And they're experiencing it, and they're also very upset about this and worrying about this. And it's not being identified. It's like when, it's similar to when chronic fatigue first came on the scene. And then what happened was, people were getting, they were being told to go to psychiatrists, being told to, that it's all in their mind and this didn't happen. And then finally, they were able to test it and find out that these people were really suffering. Well, what we have now is we have this post-COVID or long-haul COVID. And the symptoms are pretty pervasive. They can be fatigue, but extreme fatigue, shortness of breath, especially with exercise. It can be a continuous cough. It can be joint pain. It can be chest pain. It can be depression, headache, fever, loss of taste and smell, and a pounding of the heart. All of these can be very severe or slight, depending. And it doesn't happen only with severe cases of COVID. It can be even asymptomatic COVID or mild cases of COVID. And people can end up with the long-haul COVID symptoms. And what we find is that the intensity of the infection doesn't determine whether people come up with this. But what seems to have an influence is the fact of pre-existing conditions. So if you're severely inflamed and then you contact COVID, we have a different residual value or post-COVID a probability. If you're diabetic, you have a different probability. If you have insulin resistance or autoimmune disease. So, Dr. Deckel, what do you think about this?
Well, I have quite a few patients like this in my practice, unfortunately. And some of them are so severe that they actually we're contemplating suicide. obviously they did not, thank God. But this is a problem, and everything that you described, as far as symptoms are concerned, it's all of the above. Okay, some of them still don't have smell and taste a year later after COVID, and it kind of begs the question and say, okay, number one, how many patients that had COVID, by the way, can't avoid COVID. Everybody is going to have it, vaccine or no vaccine. We know that. So what kind of percentage are actually having chronic COVID, okay, or residual COVID, COVID, whatever you want to call it? And some numbers are 10 to 15%, which probably sounds about right. So we're talking about a lot of people.
Yes.
It's 10% of the population, because everybody has COVID.
Everybody got it.
So the question is, what do we do? So I tell you what I do when I see a patient like this. I first and foremost take a very detailed interview of chronologically what happened, how it happened, and really take a look at all the symptoms that specific patient has. And the bottom line is the following, at least in my opinion. These are patients that their immune system was not functioning at the high level that is necessary to beat this virus once and for all. Create enough antibodies and get the body where it needs to go. Okay. And again, it's not just one thing. It's not just one thing. It's not just the immune system. It's usually also the digestive system. Okay. It's all about energy. I sound like a broken record, but it is what it is. If the body doesn't have the right resources to create energy correctly and to supply the necessary energy to the departments that need to protect us and to rejuvenate us and to rebuild us and to keep us healthy, something's going to give. 10% of us don't have enough reserves. So what I do with these patients, really rebuild them from the foundations, which is usually what? The gut, adrenal, and thyroid. That's really being very basic. Okay, of course, some of them would need detoxification, which you have to be very careful because they don't have energy to detoxify. Some of them would need what? Really addressing emotionality, because if you've been a year post-COVID and you can't get out of bed or barely, what is it? You can imagine the psychological makeup of these people. So it again, this to me is functional. There's no prescription drugs that we give to these people. We just have to support them, tell them this is, you are functionally impaired. Let's fix the function, you're going to have a good life. Because at this point, they've seen 10 other doctors, they're totally depressed, totally out of their mind because they think they're dying and they feel like it. And it's very important for us as holistic physicians to support them, let them know they're not losing their mind. It's just a function that needs to be improved. And if they're willing to do it, they'll get better.
Exactly. And many of these people really don't have a choice, but they're also not being given a choice either. Because it confounds the standard medical community. So it's really important to understand how stress plays a part in this, how stress can aggravate this, and how it's difficult not to be stressed when you don't feel well, when you can't function, when you can't go to work. I know of people, and one of my patients hadn't been to work in a year ever since they got COVID. Mm-hmm. But also, I had another patient that now has been never felt well after she got the vaccine and now has been diagnosed with autoimmune disease. Mm-hmm. Now, what can happen, and there's multiple theories on what is really happening with this post-COVID symptom, and that there is like a protein that isn't the full virus, so can't reactivate into the viral infection, but the body can't discharge it, and it's stimulating an inflammation. And so there's all kinds of symptoms that will come up, particularly autoimmune, because your body, in trying to attack or remove this protein, creates inflammation in the body, which becomes an autoimmune disease. So there are, and there have been, some very successful holistic treatments. And one of the big pieces of it, or the beginning piece of it, is bringing down inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, bring down inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be done with a very powerful, very strong curcumin and boswellia. And you can begin to bring down inflammation in the body and bring down pain. And another piece is quality of sleep. The ability to get a quality sleep can be so regenerative that the body, what happens is the inflammation and the agitation doesn't allow the body to go into a deep sleep. So the body never gets rested, and it builds its immunity in sleep. Another is nutritional support, as we've been talking about. You know, I really believe in intermittent fasting.
Mm-hmm.
No snacking at all, and letting the body and the digestive system relax in between meals. And that's such a powerful thing to do. And it's so minor, but we've been so trained into snacking that it's just amazing.
That's true.
And Europeans never would snack. And now they're being trained into snacking because our food companies have gone over there and they're starting to get fat.
Mm-hmm.
Bodies can't.
Increased consumption.
Pardon?
Increased consumption.
Exactly. And another piece of it is, and this is a repetition, which is kind of interesting, another piece of it is exercise as able, because circulation is based on the motion of the body. But you know what else I like to put in there? I like to put in naltrexone. Low-dose naltrexone for autoimmune inflammation. It can be very powerful. It can hit the spot at 3 milligrams or 4.5 milligram.
Mm-hmm.
You can sometimes, depending, nobody's all the same, but you can really see a difference. But it takes a little while to start working. It takes about 10 weeks, so 2.5 months you're taking it and saying nothing's happening, and nothing's happening. But then you look up and you find yourself getting better, that the inflammation is going down. It's a very powerful treatment.
Yeah. Good point. Good point.
So
as we say, we have solutions, and they just need to ask the questions. How do I get better?
Exactly. Exactly. I love mushrooms. I love cordyceps to build up the immunity. And you know what else I love?
Mm-hmm.
Apple cider vinegar for help digestion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I recommend two tablespoons in water about 10 minutes before each meal.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful. So, Dr. Dekel, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. It's been too long. And,
I know.
And time flies when you're having fun.
I know.
And it just flew. And I look up and I go, oh my goodness.
We're out of time.
So, thank you very much, Dr. Dekel. The listeners contact you?
Oh, it's very simple. They can go on my website, drdekel.com, D-R, dekel.com, or call Dorothy in my office at 843-422-8328. 843-422-8328.
Thank you so much. And I look
forward to continue our discussions on very important topics for everybody involved.
And we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. And I know you learned something. I did. Every time I speak to you, with you, Dr. Dekel.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
My pleasure. Our pleasure. Bye-bye.
Have a great evening.
You too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is frenarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.